You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
From Lake Superior to Lake Michigan, this is Wisconsin's Morning Conversation. Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:06 right now. We hope that you are having a great start to your morning. If you are in La Crosse listening on WLCX and Richland Center on WRCE, Wisconsin Rapids on WFHR, or Hayward on WBZH, thank you so much for joining us. This is Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And I'm Brian Noonan. Good morning. If you want to get involved in the show, want to talk to us, we got a lot of people who were still sending things in about their favorite kids' books, their books when they were a kid. So you can do that. You can jump in on any topic, 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Let's check a few headlines before we move on to some other things. We'll start with, well, Jamie, you let, this was your,
this is a big one.
Favorite headline. Thank goodness.
It is.
So go ahead.
This is a big one. Governor Evers signed Gail's law to expand breast cancer screenings into law yesterday. This will affect obviously all of Wisconsin. The law requires insurance to cover additional tests like MRIs and ultrasounds, especially for women with dense breast tissue. It aims to catch cancer earlier and also improve survival rates, as about 6,000 women are diagnosed each year. The change also removes cost barriers so more women can get the screenings they need. That is a big win for the health of women throughout the state of Wisconsin.
Very good news. The U.S. Mint can now begin producing Trump commemorative gold coins. I know Frank's on the waiting list to get a couple of those. A federal arts commission on Thursday approved the final design for a 24-karat gold commemorative coin bearing President Trump's image to help celebrate America's 250th birthday. Not the way I want to celebrate, but that's just me. The vote by the U.S. Commission of Fine Arts, whose members are supporters of the Republican president and were appointed by him earlier this year, voted without objection. It clears the way for the U.S. Mint to begin production on the coin, whose size and denomination are still under discussion. It's going to be the biggest coin. It's going to be a billion-dollar coin.
And finally, in other headlines that you may have missed, Microsoft says that it's going to stop using non-disclosure agreements with local governments when planning new data centers. The company says the change is meant to improve transparency and also build trust with communities. Microsoft is also working to end existing NDAs already in place. It says, though, that it will still protect certain proprietary information where allowed by law. Well, that, I guess that's good news for all of the data centers that they keep trying to bring into the state of Wisconsin. Maybe by the time you get that much pushback from community after community, you have to rethink how you're doing things. I don't know. Weird.
Well, we talked about the oil prices earlier. Goldman Sachs has said that the spike could stretch into 2027. Brent crude, which is the benchmark global oil, rose 1.4% to $110.20. But now President Trump is saying, in an effort to reassure us that even though the gas prices are the highest in nearly 2.5 years, he said it's going to be over pretty soon. But 3 weeks in, the conflict shows no signs of abating, and 2027 is still a long way away.
And just this morning, oil prices per barrel rose to $110. On average right now, we're seeing about, just new numbers this morning within the last few minutes, about $3.91 per gallon. I know community to community, state to state, that is going to vary. But it turns out it's not getting better anytime soon.
Not getting better at all. All right, I want you to share your thoughts on this. So most politicians say that they're retiring to spend time with their family. That's the line. Do you believe that? Or what do you think the real reason is that a politician will step down? There's a specific case that brought this question up. 855-75-CIVIC, 855-752-4842. Spend time with their families. True or just a cover?
Yeah.
So the reason we're asking, Jamie, is State Senate Majority Leader Devin LeMahieu announced that he will not seek re-election, ending his time in office. After more than a decade, he's represented his district since 2015 and has been the top Republican leader in the Senate since 2020. And he, again, used the "I want to start a new chapter and spend more time with my family."
I found this to... honestly, after some of the rhetoric that we heard from the GOP over the weekend, I was not shocked by this when this news came out on yesterday. Good for him. I mean, if you want to hang up the gavel and you're ready to move on and do something else, good for you. Obviously, what we are looking at now in the state capitol is completely different leadership on the GOP going forward with the this coming off the heels of Robin Voss announcing his retirement a few weeks ago. Here's what I'm going to say, and this might be wildly unpopular with some of our listeners, and let me explain my reasoning in just a moment. Really, honestly, Robin Voss and LeMahieu have been wildly successful at their jobs. Now, I don't say
you don't
that
have to like what they
I didn't like what they did, but they were wildly successful at their jobs. They were able to make sure that their caucus was always together. They were able to get them to vote the way they needed to. They were able to be stalwarts on certain policies. They were able to hold things up. They were wildly successful. I know we don't like to admit that. When it comes to what their job actually was, they did it very well. So I think the next few weeks, few months, as we look forward to a midterm election where we're also going to be electing a new governor for this state, I think this is going to be fascinating to play out and see if there are actually any front runners in that come out as who will be in charge at as far as legislative leadership. My next question is, is it really spending time with families, or is there something else going on here? Like, is there writing on the wall for what's happening across the nation and this wave that people are feeling? Or really, do they feel like, hey, I've done everything I can, it's time?
Well, for LeMahieu, it may have had to do with, you mentioned the inflammatory rhetoric. It was all, there were threats that if he brought two bills to the Senate floor last week, which he ended up doing, that he would be out. And so maybe it was just like, all right, fine, I've had enough. If my own party is turning against me, what's the point?
Sure.
So there could be that. Wishful thinking is that they do see writing on the wall. The worst that can happen is, like, well, we heard it from the president when it came to Iran. You get somebody who's worse, and worse meaning for the Democrats, because they, I don't know how you could have anybody rally their group better than LeMahieu and Voss,
right,
as you said. But who knows? Maybe you'd get people in there who wouldn't. Well, Voss really didn't cooperate too much with the other side either. So,
right.
I don't know. All right. That argument's no good, because you really couldn't get anybody worse as far as being stonewalling Democratic efforts. But to see the fact that there could be this blue wave coming,
yeah,
you want to get out of the way early, because he's not the only high-profile Republican that said, you know what? I'm done.
Yeah. In fact, there's been a wave of them this week, and we'll get to those in a second. Roger from Stevens Point chiming in on the text line this morning. They've reached a breaking point, says Roger. Most Republicans are tired and stressed because of their allegiance to Donald Trump. That might be true. Robin Voss actually indicated that he did receive a lot of pressure to step down from his role when he spoke at the Madison Press Club this week for WISP Politics. He alluded to the pressure he got from Mike Lindell, pillow CEO.
Is he still able to exert pressure? Is he still able to exert any pressure?
But I think it's interesting that even a guy like Robin Voss, who did his job so well and basically stood by the GOP agenda for so long, at some point was like, you know what, I've had enough. Like, I've kind of had enough, and it's time for me to go do something else. Now, we mentioned some of these others that won't be seeking re-election. We've had a bit of a wave on the Republican side this week. Senator Van Wongard from Racine, he represents Senate District 21. He has come out and said he will not seek re-election. The Assembly Speaker Pro Temp, Kevin Peterson from Assembly District 57, announced yesterday he will also not be seeking re-election. And Representative Rick Gundrum from Slinger, representing Assembly District 58, also said yesterday he will not be seeking re-election. Now, remember, in the Assembly, because of fairer maps, the Democrats started making a dent in those numbers.
Yes.
Now, three is obviously not going to replace and get the majority. But I think it's interesting that they are now making could potentially make an even bigger dent, depending on what happens as we go forward here.
Roger brought up an interesting point. If your only ability to govern is based on what as a Republican is what Donald Trump wants. It has to be, for some, not for all, but for some it has to be a little disheartening, a little pressure, because let's be honest, I think most of us get tired of having to think about one person. I do long for the days when we didn't really have to think about the president every day. We just trusted that they were doing their job and it was it. So I know people are getting tired of being bombarded with nonstop. So it would have to be the same for our elected officials who are like, but this isn't good for us.
Right.
It's not good for Wisconsin to have to always kowtow to what this administration is wanting us to do. So I fought what I could fight, but I can't. And it's not worth the hassle anymore.
Now, I had mentioned that it was a little harder for the Democrats to make inroads as far as numbers in the assembly. On the Senate, though, I think it is a little bit more fascinating because we're going to see a lot of turnover in leadership all the way across the board in 2027. But with those with the reduced Republican advantage because of the maps, the Senate is much more competitive, and Democrats actually have a real chance to gain some control here going into 2027. And so, there, you know, everybody, when they step down, has their reason for doing so. I have to, but this is where I start to wonder, are they seeing a little bit of a wave? Are they concerned about the numbers? You know, they have... We see these external polls all the time, and sure. I know some people don't trust them. The internal polls that the parties are privy to with what the voting habits look like and where people are leaning are much more accurate usually than what we see on an external layer. So maybe there is something to be said for that. It's really hard to speculate, but I don't know. There's going to be a bit of a vacuum, I think, in leadership, especially on the Republican side, at least for a wee bit anyway.
Well, John makes a point. He's in Oshkosh listening to WISS. He says, follow the money. These people will all walk into
of
huge
course.
Payday with a new private sector role, which makes what I had said, that they're just tired of dealing with all this, so much easier.
Yes.
It's easy to walk away from a gig when you know you've got a big money gig waiting for you. It all kind of ties together. And when, here's the irony, you take that big money private sector job, how much extra time are you going to have with your family? You're going to be making the big money.
And
not
in fact,
much.
LeMahieu actually says that he's going to step away to engage in supporting conservative policies from the outside. So essentially confirming what John is saying, those private sector jobs.
Yep.
You know, at least he told us the quiet part out loud in this particular case, right? They don't always do that. You know, I don't know where this is headed, but I think if you are somebody who is interested in politics in the state of Wisconsin, if you're interested in watching the process play out, if you're tired of watching the GOP constantly be in charge in this state, there's a prime opportunity to maybe flip that script a little bit, or at least increase the Democratic numbers as far as representation across the board. So I'm, you got to be a little excited, maybe a little weary, but maybe a little excited too. If you're watching politics play out in Wisconsin right now, I guess maybe this makes me even more excited for all of the upcoming elections because, you know, there is a chance to maybe change some things across the state and in the Capitol.
Well, it's we can only hope. That's what we're
looking
for. When we come back, oh, man, Michael Alfonso and Sean Duffy in the news. Another blackmail attempt, for lack of a more refined term, has not panned out for the administration. We'll get to all of that and so much more as we head toward the bottom of the 8:30 hour here on Daybreak. I'm Brian Noonan.
I'm Jamie Martinson. It's 8:19 right now. This is the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Fairly solid, better than expected. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
It's 8:22 right now. Thank you for joining us on this Friday. This is the Civic Media Network. You are listening to Daybreak. My name is Jamie Martinson.
Hey, good morning. I'm Brian Noonan. If you travel between Superior, Wisconsin and Duluth, Minnesota, you have no doubt gone over the Blatnik Bridge. You know, the bridges need some repairs, and there was a lot of talk about that. And funds were being withheld because, who knows, the administration? I don't know why. I don't remember. I think it was it had to do with voting blocks.
We don't want to support economy and transportation. Yeah, we didn't want to do those. No.
So they were holding back money, but now, good news, more than $1 billion in federal funding has been approved to replace the Blatnik Bridge. The total cost is going to be about $1.8 billion. But this is a huge, huge artery, as I mentioned, between Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Yeah, absolutely. And the bridge was built in 1961. It's set and is set to close due to age and condition. The delay in funding had raised concerns about the rise in construction costs. Wisconsin and both Minnesota are each contributing $400 million to repair this bridge. About $400 billion in goods cross this bridge every single year because it connects Superior, Wisconsin, and Duluth, Minnesota. The project is expected to create about 1,000 construction jobs, over 1,000 construction jobs, and could take 5 to 7 years once it begins. Now, the project is expected to go out for bids in June. So we bring this up because yay for Sean Duffy. This all had to be approved by Wisconsin's own Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy. But then, Brian, on the heels of that, because every time there's good, there's bad.
Of course.
Or questionable in this particular case. On the heels of that, we also got news that Sean Duffy, in this massive $16 billion rail project in New York and New Jersey, it's all being tied now to him and his son-in-law, who is running in the 7th District for Tom Tiffany's old seat, as Tom Tiffany runs for governor of the great state. And all of this funding for this $16 billion rail project has officially been frozen. And the details are where it's at.
Spill the tea. Where are the details? What is the details? Well, what do we need to know? What corporate and political corruption play in?
Around the same time that they were trying to approve this massive project, lobbyists connected to transportation and infrastructure started donating to Michael Alfonso in Wisconsin's 7th District, who happens to be, as we mentioned, Sean Duffy's son-in-law. Now, Alfonso had no direct control over federal transportation decisions, but of course, his father-in-law does. So many of the donors have businesses in industries regulated or actually funded by Duffy's department, including airlines, rail companies, construction, and even tech. Some of those donors had never previously contributed to Duffy or other Wisconsin politicians. So now this is raising questions about why they have decided to donate now. Now, let us be clear. The donations are legal. They are legal.
Okay.
But there's some ethics involved in this, as there often many times are with many of the administration officials right now. There is this appearance that giving money could help influence decisions at the federal level. And Alfonso has obviously benefited from those connections, including some shared consultants with Duffy and support from a super PAC that funded about $1 million from Duffy's former campaign. Now, there are some Wisconsin Republicans, as you can imagine, who are frustrated with all of this. Duffy has even appeared at campaign events for Alfonso, even though officials say he's doing it in a personal capacity, not using his government role. You're the transportation secretary. Yeah. Everybody knows that. You can't separate the two. But thank you. But Wisconsin Republicans are worried because Alfonso could gain an advantage because of the family ties. Now, if you remember and were able to listen to us earlier this week, civicmedia.us, to see all of our past shows, by the way, you will remember that we talked about the fact that the GOP in the 7th District wouldn't endorse any candidate because they weren't comfortable doing so. And now here we are having this conversation today.
It's strange how things are all connected once you start pulling on the thread.
Yeah.
To see what's up.
Yeah. So I'll give Duffy credit where credit is due for funding this major bridge project. But then I'm going to take a look at this situation and think, wow, is this really what we're going to do? Because if you're a voter in Wisconsin, especially the 7th district, who is this campaign working for? Right? Because that's my question. The people in this district, or are they essentially working for a network of donor and connections behind the scenes? And if Alfonso gets elected to a national level, to a national seat, representing the state, what are his priorities?
There's nothing about this story, unfortunately, that surprises me.
No.
And to answer your question, I don't believe there's very many politicians who are working for the people. When you get to a certain level, you are beholding. That's why it always goes back to money, money, money. We got to get all this money out of politics, because I don't care how ethical or unethical you are. When somebody's giving you that kind of money, you owe them one way or another. And whether they tell you you do or not, or whether you think you do or not, you're beholden to these people who give you all that money. And if you're ethical, you can walk the line and still do your best. If you're unethical, slide up to the trough, piggy, and start eating, because it's just going to keep coming.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and I would understand if the GOP of the 7th district had any inkling that this was going on, or was going to be a national story at some point. I can understand why they were hesitant to be like, he's our guy. Yeah. We're going to totally endorse him, right?
Well, we'll see.
Interesting.
All right, well, listen, there's some other good news.
Yeah.
And we're going to talk about affordable housing with NeighborWorks Green Bay when we come back. So stick around. It's always fun.
It is on the Civic Media Network.
Local voices, statewide impact. It's Daybreak with Brian and Jamie.
Thank you so much for joining us this morning. This is the Civic Media Network. My name is Jamie Martinson.
And good morning, I'm Brian Noonan. The Wisconsin State Senate passed Assembly Bill 454, a proposal authored by State Representative Ahmad Rivera-Wagner of Green Bay to expand access to home ownership for working families across Wisconsin. The bill is designed to bring the American dream of home ownership back within reach. NeighborWorks Green Bay had some input on the bill, and Noel Halverson, who is the president and CEO of NeighborWorks Green Bay, joins us now to tell us what's in the bill and how it'll help working families across Wisconsin. Noel, we're grateful for your time. Thanks for being here. So the bill creates, from what I read, a workforce home loan program. What exactly is that program? How does it work?
Yeah, the program's going to allow for modest income families to get into the homeownership game. They're, you know, been increasingly priced out of the market due to the high cost of homes or the high cost of debt. And this will offer a second mortgage loan that will make the home more affordable for them because of the lower payments that'll come from it. They can get up to $60,000 or 25% of the purchase price of the home, whichever is less, under this program.
Noel, as we jump into this conversation, this is an area that your organization is very well versed in, right? You work with homeowners, you work with teaching people how to save for home ownership. So for people who aren't familiar with NeighborWorks Green Bay, what kind of work are you guys doing in the community that tied you into this particular bill?
Sure. NeighborWorks Green Bay helps families prepare for home ownership. You know, that American dream that we all aspire to, or many aspire to. We've educated and counseled over 20,000 prospective home buyers over the years, and helped 4,000 Green Bay area families get into home ownership through that counseling, that education, making smart decisions, saving money, putting a household budget together, figuring out what you can actually afford, buying within your means, doing the smart things the way, you know, maybe previous generations did it. And and even though, you know, the families that we're working with, you know, follow the rules, if you will, they're having a tougher and tougher time accessing the market just because the prices keep going up and the cost of debt keeps going up. And so, we're looking for new tools that can help families attain that dream of home ownership, build some equity over their lives, and have something to pass on to their kids.
Well, no, one of the big things that people say when they're trying to buy a house is, man, I've been making my rent payment, which is more than a mortgage payment will be, but it's that down payment. So you talked about this loan being up to $60,000, 25% or less of the value of the home. What's the interest on this? How are people supposed to pay this back? Because it sounds like, okay, even with a mortgage payment and this second loan, it should still be equal or just more than what a lot of rents are.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's one of the things that we find when we're working with families to purchase homes every day. You know, oftentimes when I went through my homeownership journey, I was renting for more than my mortgage payment ended up being once I became a homeowner. Mm-hmm. And one of the tools that NeighborWorks Green Bay has offered historically is a down payment and closing cost assistance loan, a small, you know, a deferred payment loan that just kind of helps you clear that hurdle. And this program is a bigger loan, up to $60,000 or 25% of the purchase price. There's no interest on that loan. It has to be paid back, but it's they're not going to be charging interest on it. And for some low income buyers, the starting of those payments is actually deferred for a few years, and so it'll help folks. You know, you've got to spend a lot of money when you move into a house.
Yes,
there's always something that, you know, either you plan for or you didn't plan for that you know, can cost thousands of dollars. And, you know, just equipping the place and, the surprise of something that's broken that needs to be fixed and all those other things. And so, you know, that can be really helpful. But the key for this program, though, is that it's you know, it isn't deferred. It will come back to the pot and go out and help another family someday. And I think that's, you know, the really important thing when you're looking at some of these. You know, there's limited resources available to make, sure. You know, good things happen in our communities. And you want to make sure that they work for us for the long haul.
We're talking with Noel Halverson. He is the president and CEO of NeighborWorks in Green Bay, nwgreenbay.org, if you want to check out more about their program. Now, it was noted in this bill, and I find this astounding, since buying a home is such an American dream, that the average first-time home buyer is now around 40 years old. So what, in your experience, Noel, does that tell us about how tough this job market, or this housing market, I should say, has actually become?
Yeah, it and we're seeing that, you know, all over. It's when I started working with some of these families, you know, some years ago, it was the median age of our buyers was 30, and now it's wow. It's advanced a decade to 40, and you know, when you think about, you know, purchasing a home, and now you're purchasing a home for, hopefully something that's reasonable, but we're seeing, you know, sale prices for homes, you know, the $300,000, you know, pushing $400,000. If you're taking on that kind of a debt load at age 40, you know, and that thing, if it's a 30-year, you know, mortgage that you're paying down, you're going to be 70 something when that house is finally paid off. You might actually pass before you know, you've paid that off. There's just less opportunity to build, you know, that cushion, right? It used to be that somebody could look at the fact that they might be thinking about retirement at a time when they don't have that mortgage payment hanging over their head anymore, and they're in a situation where if they needed to tap the equity in their home or do something else creative to deal with the health surprise, or, you know, leverage that equity for some other, you know, life change, they could do that. And if you're not buying until you're 40 years old, then you don't have some of those options downstream, and that can be a challenge in it itself. We'd love to see the median age of buyers, you know, go back the other direction and for younger people to be able to access the housing market.
Well, Noel, we know NeighborWorks Green Bay was involved and had some input on this. What other groups were involved in crafting this bill along with the senator?
Well, I think that, you know, it was really exciting. I had met Representative Rivera Wagner when he was the mayor's chief of staff in Green Bay, and you know, he was working on developing a community land trust, and we've worked with him on that, and actually NeighborWorks Green Bay has recently launched that program, a way to ensure permanent affordability for homes in the trust. But the community as a whole, you know, was at the table with us when we were talking. The local Habitat for Humanity was there, and other interested, you know, community stakeholders, talking about the challenges facing aspiring home buyers in the Green Bay area. But I know also that you know, a lot of folks across the state have been engaged in the conversations about this, and Habitat organizations around Wisconsin have put their voices into this, and it's really been a team effort, as kind of everything in housing needs to be these days if we're going to make a difference and move the needle for the working families of our communities.
Noel Halverson is the president and CEO of NeighborWorks of Green Bay, nwgreenbay.org. Now, you mentioned a little earlier in our conversation here today that this program is designed to be repaid as well as reused. So for anybody who's interested in this program, explain to us why that's important for long-term housing support.
Sure. You know, the notion of funding a gap for somebody to achieve that dream of home ownership has been around for a long time, and there are really great tools. There's a program called Down Payment Plus that is available from member banks in the Federal Home Loan Bank of Chicago, and it provides a forgivable down payment assistance package for folks who are trying to get into home ownership, and that's, you know, that's a really powerful tool for many folks, because it really helps just clear that hurdle of getting into home ownership if they've got, you know, all the other ducks lined up. But as you look at the deeper needs for some families, particularly when you get to that, you know, below 80% of the area median income, folks who are working hard every day and, you know, and I believe deserve to have that dream of home ownership and attain it, the gap between what they can put together with their income, because it isn't keeping up with the rest of the costs of living, to get into that home, you know, requires a deeper subsidy, and but if it's something that goes in there and is gone, you can't use it again. Whereas if it goes into a family as a loan, even a low cost or no cost loan, but they have to pay it back, well then that can help the next family and the next family on down the line. You know, we make loans to families at NeighborWorks Green Bay that are no interest deferred payment until they sell, or, you know, it's no longer their primary residence, but that money comes back and helps the next family purchase a home as well. And I think it's really important that when our communities invest in home ownership, that they invest in a way that keeps those resources working in perpetuity for future generations of home buyers.
We're talking to Noel Halverson. He's president and CEO of NeighborWorks Green Bay. NWGreenBay.org is their website if you want to find out more about the work they do. We've only got a couple minutes left, Noel, but you mentioned Habitat for Humanity. I have some experience working with them. How does this new proposed program that's coming in the bill expand on or differ from what Habitat for Humanity offers?
Well, you know, I think all of us who are working in the community development space, trying to bring homes to the market that may be, you know, lower cost than some other homes that are coming into the market, need to find something to close the gap between what it still costs to build that house and what we're trying to sell it for. And in some cases, you know, that gap between what it actually costs to build something and what the client that we're trying to sell a house to can afford can be in the tens of thousands of dollars. And tools like this will help, you know, not only you know, the average home buyer, but it'll help an organization like Habitat or an organization like NeighborWorks Green Bay when they're looking at putting that deal together. Okay. Think about the ultimate financing that that family is going to be having and how they're going to make that work for them in the long haul, and have a sustainable set of payments. But one that may also mean that that the organizations bringing those houses to the market don't necessarily have to sink as many dollars into that home as they might otherwise.
We have just a couple of seconds left, Noel. And before we get the wrap up here, if people are listening right now, they're thinking about home ownership, they feel like it's out of reach, what should they be doing right now? And again, just a couple of seconds.
Sure. If they could, you know, they reach out to a local organization like a NeighborWorks Green Bay that helps families prepare for home ownership. We've got classes, one-on-one education and counseling, tools to help you ascertain whether you're ready, and if you are ready, put a plan together to make it work.
Noel Halverson, President and CEO of NeighborWorks Green Bay, nwgreenbay.org. Noel, thanks for your time today. Have a great weekend. We'll be back with more on the Civic Media Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
8:52 right now. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. We love this part of the week because we take a break from all of the politics, all of the negativity that, you know, is constantly bestowed upon us all on a daily basis, and we highlight some of the good stuff happening all around Wisconsin.
Yes, and it's all Wisconsin. It's all kicking off the weekend, so let's kick it off by talking about one Wisconsin city that is the happiest in the nation. A new report from personal finance website WalletHub analyzed 182 cities, the 150 most populated cities in the U.S., as well as at least two of the cities with the highest population in each state. And here you go. Madison, Wisconsin was chosen the 12th happiest city in America for 2026. We're only a few months in. Talk to me in December. But for right now, Madison is one of the happiest cities. Milwaukee came in 153rd out of 182. So Madison, you are rocking it. You're happy. WalletHub evaluated those cities on 29 key indicators of happiness, including income growth, depression rates, and average daily leisure time. Now, not counting the Badger basketball fans from yesterday, which brought the depression rates up. The indicators were considered, weighted at varying amounts in three categories: emotional and physical well-being, income and employment, and community environment. Madison particularly stood out in the emotional and physical well-being category. It ranked 13th. So that is excellent. And if you're wondering, Fremont, California was voted the happiest city in the U.S.
Oh, well.
Congrats to everybody in Madison.
That's right.
I want to see a spring in everybody's step
as
you are in the 12th happiest city in America.
Not just because in less than an hour it's officially spring and the weather is going to be beautiful. We want an actual spring in the step. This is a story that you chose specifically my background,
for you.
And I love this.
Right.
And I actually, some of our storm chasers actually met this kid, and you'll find out all about this in a minute. But he is a Hayward High School senior. His name is Egan Young, and he is fascinated with hailstorms and tornadoes. Well, aren't we all? His fascination with weather-related events began with the September 14th, 2014 hailstorm. He remembers that date as if it were yesterday, and his interest then expanded into storm chasing, which is the practice of tracking and pursuing severe weather, especially those tornadoes, which are a little harder to get than most people think. But anyway, documented the storms through photographs and video. Now, Egan actually attended the National Storm Chaser Summit. That is held on a yearly rotation. It's been held in multiple cities. This year it was held in Denver, Colorado. And that event draws everyone from credentialed meteorologists to weather diehards. We actually, our company streams that entire event.
Oh, I was going to ask if you guys were there.
Yes, we stream the entire event. Some of our chasers are actually on the board that help organize this. And my husband is also very instrumental in making making sure the three-day festivities go off without a hitch. Now, at the particular summit, we were not there, though, this year because other job commitments. But at the summit, Egan was thrilled to win a Vortex Award, yes, for the best shock and awe selfie of 2025. It was this carefully framed photo of his reaction to an F3 tornado in the background. He exhibited a growing interest in storms as he learned about major weather events that happened in northwestern Wisconsin. We mentioned that hailstorm, but there was also the 2016 Bayfield floods and the 2017 tornado, which occurred while he was playing at a piano recital. Always dump the piano, go storm chasing. That's what my husband would tell him. Now, Egan said he attended for two reasons this year. He wanted to learn and he also wanted to connect, and winning the Vortex Award was the icing on the cake. Now, in case you're wondering, he is a certified Skywarn spotter and serves as a weather watcher. He operates an official weather station that contributes observations to the National Weather Service. He has actually documented 12 tornadoes, a good career ahead of him, and his most memorable tornado was in June of last year. It was the Gary, South Dakota EF3 tornado, where he captured that selfie, and yes, that was an incredible tornado.
It was a very cool photo.
It was. And, it was a good tornado. Didn't cause any damage. Stayed in the fields. That's where we like to see him.
All right. Yeah, and he's going to school to study meteorology.
Love
so
it.
I saw that story. I was like, well,
yes.
If there was one more Taylor, the only thing that would have made it better is if he also won a spelling bee while he was
there.
Or
we did it at the same time.
We got to see if he got 35 on his ACTs,
okay,
though. All right, so let's move from storm chasing to food. Here's who won the 2026 food fight for the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers, your local minor league baseball team. The winner of the 2026 Salmon's Meat Products Food Fight for the Wisconsin Timber Rattlers. That you got to consolidate that name a little bit, folks. It's this year's competition, which was the Brat edition, received 130 submissions of recipes using one of four provided Salmon's Meat product bratwursts. So the submissions were narrowed down to the top five recipients. David Clark from Wild Rose was announced as the big winner. He had a Naff's Nacho Poutine recipe. Yes, made with sliced badger brat coins on crispy waffle fries topped with beer cheese and fresh cheese curds.
Well, now David, I'm hungry.
You're a man who is after my own heart.
Sounds amazing.
The other finalists all sound delicious. There was a Southwest Grand Slam. There was a Reuben Bratwurst, a Pizza Bratwurst, and a Hot Honey Brat. Those were the other five, but congratulations to the winner. And congratulations on us for getting through those three derelict diary stories before Parker started swinging at us, because we got to go. It's the weekend.
It is the weekend. It is the weekend. But hopefully that will take you out on a bit of a higher note. I know the politics can get heavy in the world, and there's a lot of things going on. But let's focus on some of the good stuff happening right around us, too. We have a minute yet? Did we actually
Did.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, you guys flew.
All right. So let me, I panicked because I see in there, the Southwest Grand Slam, this sounds great. Jalapeno and pepper jack brat, topped with pickled onions, roasted corn and black bean salsa, cilantro and lime, and served on a brioche bun with avocado cream.
Ooh.
And then the one that really got me, the hot honey brat. Classic brat topped with hot honey, brown mustard, and caramelized onions on a soft roll. So there, that officially ends Dairyland Diaries for this Friday. No, Mr. Plow King, ketchup is not allowed on a hot dog once you get past kindergarten. Yes, I'm a purist. Yes, you can argue, but no, you cannot at me. So there you go. No ketchup on the hot dogs or on bratwurst. Spicy mustard,
maybe.
Sauerkraut, that's it.
Yeah.
Stop it. Cheese sauce.
8:59.
Now it's
right
time
now
to go.
Yes, 8:59. This is the Daybreak. Thank you for joining us on the Civic Media Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.